We will proceed with the next case, Sadikoi Bay LLC, Series 2301 Heron versus LNB Corporation, case number 65151. Good morning, Mr. Bone.
Good morning, Your Honor. Michael Bone for appellant, Sadikoi Bay LLC, Series 2301 Heron. It pleases the court. I'd like to reserve about 5 minutes of time for rebuttal. This is a pretty straightforward case. Procedurally, it was very short. My client acquired a property at an OA foreclosure sale. And I say OA instead of HOA because this is a commercial property. And because it's a commercial property, Chapter 116 does not apply. Chapter 116 says it applies only to commercial property, to residential properties. It can apply to other properties if the CC&Rs specifically say so. It doesn't specifically say so. The CC&Rs do adopt certain provisions of Chapter 116, specifically the assessment lien foreclosure provisions. So that being said, this court has previously ruled in construing the language of the CC&Rs, the rules of contract interpretation apply. And in doing so, you have to give meaning to every single part of the contract. You can't substitute, you can't take away any part. And if there's more than one reasonable interpretation, you have to use the interpretation that gives meaning to each and every portion of the contract, or in this case, the CC&Rs. Now, there are two CC&Rs here that appear to conflict, but a close reading shows they are actually quite compatible. We have section 6.18 of the CC&Rs, and that pretty much mirrors 116.3116. It says that there's a lien for assessments, and that the lien is superior to all other liens except, just like 116.3116, prior recorded liens, taxes and other governmental matters, and then it goes on to say, other than provided in this section, the lien of a first mortgage on the property. And then it talks about the super priority. And it says there's a super priority for 6 months of assessments. Again, very similar to what 116.3116 says. I will also say, well, procedurally, when this case got filed, the mortgage holder immediately filed a motion to dismiss. This was pre-SFR. You will recall there was a lot of controversy as to what the super priority language meant and what the super priority lien was, and the district court judge dismissed the case based upon that.
Is this argument made at the district court level that you're making now?
We did argue the language of the CC&Rs, and we did, of course, argue that this language did provide for a true lien that was superior to the bank's lien, which would have extinguished the lien at the foreclosure sale. And that was not the judge did not agree with that holding. In fact, I believe this case was in front of Judge Weiss, who said many times once he made a decision that there was no extinguishment, every case he had, he just ruled the exact same way. And this is one of those cases, and again, it's not handled by 116, it's controlled by the language of the CC&Rs. So you have that provision, Chapter 6.18, which gives a super priority for 6 months. The next provision also says that the mortgage lien is superior to that of the assessment lien, which appears to be in conflict with the super priority lien. But if you read the entire section, it does say the sale or transfer of a lot as the result of the exercise of a power of sale or judicial foreclosure involving a default under the first mortgage thereon shall extinguish the lien of assessments as to payments which became due prior to such sale or transfer. So the second section, which gives priority to the bank or the mortgage lien, eliminates any HOA assessments as of the date of the foreclosure sale. So that foreclosure, according to the CC&Rs, would completely wipe out the assessment lien, the super. And the only way to read these two in harmony, again, this is with the trust deed foreclosure. The only way you can give the super priority language of the CC&Rs weight and meaning is if you use them in context of an owner's association foreclosure. Meaning that if a bank forecloses, there's no super priority lien, all the liens get wiped out. If the OA forecloses, then there is the super priority. And if there is a super priority, as the court has held in SFR, it's not a payment priority. There's no language in here about a payment priority. It's a true priority lien that would extinguish the lien of the trust deed holder. And even though SFR isn't directly applicable because it's interpreting a statute as opposed to the CC&Rs, because of the similarity of the language, the rationale and reasoning behind SFR are equally applicable here. And if you look at the commentary to the UCIOA, it attempts to strike a balance between the need for the association to collect their assessments and the bank's need to have priority in the property in which it has an investment.
Let me ask you a question right here. The CC&Rs in this case, you say control the outcome. And is this a very specific set of CC&Rs for this particular case, or is it something that occurs in just about every commercial set of CC&Rs?
Your Honor, between the, I can represent that between the state and federal court, for this one client, I'm handling over 300 of these HOA cases. This is the only one I have with a commercial property. So if it's typical, I can't tell you. This is the only one I've come across. What I can tell you from reading them, I've seen a lot of HOAs that have the law firm or the attorney's name on it somewhere. And we've also seen a lot of HOAs where the developer wanted to save a couple bucks and seem to have cut and paste some other CC&Rs, put them together. This appears to be that kind of a set. There doesn't appear to have the name of any attorney or law firm on this set.
So you think it may be a one-off, basically?
Perhaps. Again, this is the only one I've seen of the type. So,
Mr. Bell, I assume these CC&Rs were recorded before the deed of trust in question was recorded.
Yes.
Okay.
They were recorded in 1996. Deed of trust was recorded in 2007.
And there was no subordination agreement or anything with it when the deed of trust was recorded about putting it ahead of the CC&Rs?
No. Not well, let me put it this way. It's a very limited record. The record consisted of briefs on both sides and publicly recorded documents, the CC&Rs, the assignment of the deed of trust, the assignment to the current holder, and the association assessment lien notices, the default, and the notice of sale. So that's all that's in the record. I do not recall from reviewing the entire matter any kind of subordination agreement. So I think if you analyze the case in this particular way to give meaning to all portions, trustee foreclosure, no more lien. OA foreclosure, then there is a super priority which would extinguish the bank's lien. And as this court has stated in the SFR matter, you know, the lien is a rather nominal lien and it's a very simple fix. You just have to come forward, you know, and pay the 6 months. Under 116, it's a 9-month payment. This is even less onerous. It's only a 6-month lien, which is even less. And therefore, it does meet the public policy of striking the balance between the need to collect the assessments and the need for the trustee holder to have a priority of its lien. And also goes with the public policy that's stated by this court in the SFR, that the assessments are the only real mean of income for an association. And if they're they are inhibited in collecting assessments. That means they have to either provide fewer services or everyone else in the association has to pick up the tab and pay more money, which is unfair to everybody else. And because the banks or the mortgage holders normally have a larger dollar investment than the owners, they should be held responsible at least for this small nominal portion of the assessments. Here, of course, they had their remedy. They could have come forward and paid it, and they would have maintained and held their trust deed, but they did not do so, and as a result, there was an extinguishment of their trust deed. And that's a rational, reasonable reading of the CCNRs that gets meaning to all the parts of the CCNRs, and that should be adopted by this court. And I will vacate the podium if there's any questions.
I just had one question for you. As you know, important to the SFR decision was the court's analysis of the application of UQA and comments to that statute in Nevada. The rules of statutory construction governing contracts wouldn't necessarily do the same. And so is this a case in which the intent of the parties should be examined with respect to potential ambiguity in the language as to what they intended, where this came from before. I just think the analysis might potentially be different.
The rules of contract construction are similar to that of statutory construction. And I thought about that particular issue, but I read the Edelstein case, which analyzed the language of the deed of trust. And there the court did not find it because it was a standard form that was used again and again. The court there did not remand for evidence of intent of the parties. The court was able to look at the contract and from the language in the contract make sense of all the provisions in the contract. And here also with the CCNRs, the court can give meaning to all provisions by saying yes. With a trust deed foreclosure, the assessment lien goes away. With an OA foreclosure, there is a six-month super priority that takes priority over the deed of trust. So I do not think it needs to be remanded for an evidentiary finding regarding the intent of the parties. And the other thing about this is there's not two sides of the contract. There's one guy who made a declaration, signed it, and recorded it. So there's not really any discussion as to negotiations. So.
True. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Sylvester, how are you doing today?
Thank you, Jeff Hardison. Members of the court, my name is Jeff Sylvester. I am the attorney representing L&B Corp, the respondent, and the holder of the first priority deed of trust on the non-residential real property located in the Sunpac Industrial Common Interest Community. It is critical to the disposition of this appeal that the court recognize that this case is not governed by Chapter 116. It's not. It's not governed by this court's decision in SFR. It is not. Both Chapter 116 that incorporates and adopts the Uniform Act and the SFR were asked to determine the applicability of the lien priority provisions set forth in the Uniform Act, specifically in Chapter 116. When the lawsuit was filed, the HOA brought the action for declaratory relief, stating that expressly this was an action governed by Chapter 116. It is not. In opposition to that, the opposition set forth the fact that this was a common interest community, but that it was non-residential. Chapter 116 specifically states, to the extent that the that it is a non-residential community, it does not apply unless the CCNRs incorporate specifically references to Chapter 116. And so, because it doesn't apply, you're not guided by SFR, nor are you guided by the comments to the Uniform Act, nor are you guided by the persuasive opinions that you adopted in SFR as assisting you in determining those issues. What you are asked to do in this case, and you'll see it again in response to Justice Pickering's, you'll see this again in commercial CCNRs if those cases go forward. You are asked to determine the intent of the declarant when he drafted the CCNRs. You are governed by principles of contract interpretation only. Now, you may look to other decisions to give you some guidance as to the words that are used or utilized by the CCNR, but you have to look to the intent of the drafter as that intent is manifested in the CCNRs.
So do you concede the language is ambiguous?
I There are a lot of different conflicting provisions. I do not believe that the language is ambiguous, specifically as it relates to the two what we call competing provisions, and that is provision 6.18 has the lien priority language, and 6.19 that has the subordination provision. And to Justice Gibbons' point, the answer is yes, there is a subordination provision that governs the outcome of this case. The subordination provision is not separate and apart from the CC&Rs. It is included and is part of the CC&Rs. That is to say that the declarant included the subordination provision in the CC&Rs when it drafted.
Was that raised at the district court level? I realize it was early in the case.
It was. Because unlike, let me back up, the decision in SFR considered and rejected the position of the U.S. Bank as it relates to the mortgage saving provision of the CC&Rs. And the reason why it was rejected is because Chapter 116 states expressly, much like the anti-deficiency statutes, if the statute creates a right, you cannot contractually waive that right. And so while there was a mortgage saving provision in U.S. Bank, because it was a residential community governed by Chapter 116 or the Uniform Act, despite the fact that the mortgage saving provision attempted to subordinate the HOA, this court held, and rightfully so, it couldn't do so because the lien priority was provided by the statutory scheme.
But how can you say, I mean, these CC&Rs, first of all, they say foreclosure shall be in accordance with, and they cite 116 by number. And then 618 and 619 of your CC&Rs lift almost wholesale the language from Chapter 116. So I completely understand your point that 116 does not apply by its terms to this set of facts. Nonetheless, the CC&Rs pulled all that into it. So what do we do with that?
They don't. They pulled in the procedure in which an HOA may foreclose, or in this case, a community interest association may foreclose. In other words,
That's 6113, but the 618 and 619 cobbled together language directly. They're a direct lift from cognate provisions in Chapter 116.
618 is almost a direct lift from the Uniform Act because it has 6 months yeah. periods without the reference to the federally insured loans, if you will.
Yeah.
619 is a provision that follows 618 that subordinates those rights. And the answer to your question is found in the definition of security interest, because you have to be able to read the two provisions and give them both meaning. Because if you find that 6.18 says the super priority lien is prior to the first mortgage, then 6.19 makes no sense.
I'm sorry?
6.19 makes no sense. In other words, you can't read them consistently if you don't make a distinction between a first mortgage and a security interest. And therein lies the difference in this case. The reference to first mortgage is found in 6.13, continuing lien, and 6.19, and the amendment that modifies both those provisions. 6.18 states that a security interest is subordinate to that super priority portion. Now, understanding that security interest includes, but it's not limited to, first mortgages, answers the question. Now, we don't have a definition of security interest in the CC&Rs, but Chapter 116 does, as does the Uniform Act. And Chapter 116 says that a security interest includes, but is not limited to, a first priority deed of trust, a mortgage, a land sales contract, a contract for the sale of real property, an assignment of leases. In 16, there are, I think, 7 or 8 specifically enumerated examples of what a security interest is. So, you may read 6.18 to say that an HOA super priority lien has priority over a security interest, but then when you read the next provision, 6.19, it only subordinates those liens to first priority mortgages. And the reason why is that the declarant is attempting to protect essentially the financial engine that funds the acquisition and development of the investable property within the park. And so what the declarant does is says, we're going to provide, if you will, a super priority portion of the assessments to security interest, except those that are first mortgages.
May I ask you this? You've touched on it at the outset, but Justice Perigary and I were both asking your opposing colleague about whether these CC&Rs are essentially one-offs. We understand that the commercial common interest communities that are not subject to 116, there are a lot of those out there. But are there CC&Rs like these that do such a perplexing job of borrowing from 116 and lifting text and cross-referencing by number sections from 116, or is this case and these CC&Rs a one-off?
If you follow the question. Let me try to answer it this way. I am a bank attorney. I do some transactional primary litigation. But I'll tell you this, that in every commercial CC&R that I've seen, there are mortgage saving provisions because lenders for commercial projects.
Well, I understand that, but are there any that take this form?
Certainly the record does not suggest one way or the other.
I don't want you to testify, so.
But I can tell you that it makes sense to incorporate the lien foreclosure provisions of Chapter 116 because that gives you the mechanism by which you can foreclose upon your HOA.
That makes perfect sense. It's where they lift the language and do it in such a cobbled together way that it becomes difficult.
Except that I don't share the opinion that they're cobbled together because in my mind there's a certain clarity and a waterfall of logic that flows from 618 and 619 when you consider the intent of the declarant as a whole. The intent is expressed in 6.13.
Let's say this. If they adopted those today, post-SFR decision, that language, would your position still be the same?
And when you say that language, you mean 6.18?
Yes, and 100%. In 6.19.
Absolutely, and it's because it turns on the definition of security interest. Because remember, the contract construction requires us to take a specific provision to qualify a more general provision. That's a tenet of contract construction. The general provision is that the super priority portion will find a security interest, a first priority security interest. The specific language is now found in Section 6.19 that says a first priority mortgage, which is a subpart, a subsection, if you will, of first security interest, is protected. That's found in 6.13, 6.18, 15.7, and in the amendments. And the amendments are instructive with respect to the intent of the declarant. Because initially, the 6.19 only protected first deeds of trust. But what was happening, it appears, by virtue of the amendment, is that some of that first priority lending required SBA financing. SBA financing requires, as a matter of law, a second deed of trust. And so you'll have a first, but because of the SBA financing, even though it's part of the same loan, it falls into a second lien position. So
counsel, doesn't your argument render the language in 6.18C unenforceable? Essentially, it renders it unimportant, irrelevant. I mean, it seems as if that language is intended to preserve the super priority lien for future assessments. You're saying that the language, we should interpret the language in 613 and 619 as providing for a subordination of the entirety of the CC&Rs to first mortgages. But that seems to run counter to the effect of the super priority lien on future assessments in C.
2 points. One, that's true if security just only means first priority mortgage. Then the two provisions are superfluous, which tells us that security interest, and 116 defines security interest to include but not be limited to. And so what the declarant is doing is saying, yes, we understand the policies and reasons for protecting the association, but we're going to provide more protection to the lending institution that provides for the funding for the development. And let me make another point in this regard.
So maybe that gets back to my earlier point about the fact that this matter should be remanded for the district court to examine the intent of the declarant, because you're making a suggestion here that the declarant's purpose was to do more to preserve the expectations and rights of future mortgage lien holders than to preserve the HOA's financial ability to preserve the park that he or she was about to develop. That's a bit of a stretch to me, and there's nothing in the record to support that, is there?
I think there is.
Really?
I think that there is, because the recitals of the CC&R state expressly that the purpose of the formation of the industrial park was to facilitate and encourage the development of industrial properties within Henderson. And then there's, again, the CC&Rs are replete with the references to the first mortgage and protection of the conventional lenders. That's what they did. If there's an ambiguity, the only ambiguity exists because it doesn't define security interest in Section 6.18. But by reference to Chapter 116 in the Uniform Act, they did. And if they borrowed from those provisions, then you must look to those definitional sections in 116 in the Uniform Act, because that will tell you that it includes first priority mortgage, but is not limited to first priority mortgage. The second point, the final point I want to make, is that when the first mortgage forecloses, it extinguishes the lien of the association. But it doesn't extinguish the debt. And this is a critical point. The debt is personal. The owner of the lot that didn't pay has personal responsibility for the repayment. But more importantly, or as importantly, is that the HOA, or the common interest community, can later reassess the unpaid portion and put a lien upon that property. It follows this way. In the last provision of 6.19, it says that the unpaid portion shall be allocated as a common expense between the remainder owners within the association. And that reallocation then can be enforced by a lien. Now, you no longer have the problem with the first priority mortgage because it's been extinguished. Now, they're the owners. So now the owner takes the ownership of the property, and the association can reallocate the unpaid portion to all of the members of the association, including but not limited to the bank that has now taken property ownership. And so the policy considerations are satisfied because at some point the association is going to be paid either by the personal obligation of the owner or by an allocated common expense to all of them, including but not limited to the lender that foreclosed. And so this is not SFR. It is not 116. It is governed by the language of the contract as we glean the intent from the declarant. You can read them consistently if you understand simply that security interest is something that includes but is not limited to first mortgage. And for those reasons, we would ask that you refer.
Any other questions for Mr. Sylvester? All right, thank you. Appreciate your input, counsel. Okay. You have just about 3 minutes, Mr. Bell.
Thank you, Your Honor. Counsel's distinction between a first security interest and a mortgage, I think, is really a distinction without a difference. And he does admit that a first security interest can include a trust deed and include a mortgage. Now, if you want to read this exact according to what the CC&R say, Section 6.18 does say first security interest. 6.19 refers to a mortgage. Well, there wasn't a mortgage on this property. There was a trust deed. And so if you want to be technical about things, there's no mortgage here. There's a trust deed. But I believe there's case law and the statutes, I believe, say that the interpretation and law involving mortgages are applicable to that of trust deeds. And first security interest would also fall within that because it would include both of them. I think Hals and I both agree that this is contract interpretation, not statutory interpretation, and it's just a matter of how you interpret it. We obviously differ on how it should be interpreted, but as you pointed out, Justice Hardesty, the only way that you can give meaning to the super priority language of 6.18, which was lifted from the UCIOA pretty much, is if you say under 6.19, a trust deed foreclosure, like it says, eliminates the lien, the assessment lien completely, and the unit owner who acquires it is not responsible for it. But with an owner's association foreclosure. And again, the CC&Rs did lift the foreclosure language and incorporated the foreclosure language from 116.
So I didn't pay a lot. Excuse me, may I interrupt you?
Certainly.
I didn't pay a lot of attention to the recitals that counsel just referred to as providing some indication of the intent of the declarant here. What is your observation or response to his reference to the recitals about the intent to protect future mortgage or deed of trust holders against the loss of their collateral?
In all the studying I've done to prepare this hearing, I didn't really look at the recitals all that much. Mm-hmm. Of course, the commentary from the UCIOA does try to strike a balance between the need to collect the assessments and the lien holder's priority. And again, as this court said in SFR, it's just a small obligation that they have to pay off a minimum amount, a minimal lien of only 6 months of the assessments. And I, in order to read the CCNRs completely and in harmony with each other, I think you have to give it the interpretation I am suggesting, that the super priority lien does kick in with an owner's association foreclosure, but not with a trustee foreclosure.
Well, it just does seem odd that if 619 is in read together with 613 is intended to provide for a subordination of the CCNR provisions, that the super priority lien is superfluous.
And according to contract construction, you have to give it some meaning. And the only way to give it some meaning is in the context of an owner's association foreclosure.
All right. Are there any other questions?
Thank you.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. These become real challenges in interpreting them, and I think you both did an excellent job this morning in assisting the court on this subject. The matter will stand.